Okay, Parakeh opens up. Vayhi bayam ha-shlishim. It was on the third day. This is the third day of the fast, where the all Bnei Yisrael were fasting for 3 days straight, doing tshuva. And this is on that third day, where Esther herself was fasting with her girls, with her nairis. But Tilbush Esther Malchus, she wore royalty. The Megillas Sefarim explains that this is referring to a very interesting and beautiful dress that was never seen before. It had beautiful, ornate things sewn into it, and all these beautiful designs. And she came into the inner part of the palace, Noichach Beis HaMelech, right in front of the king. And the king was sitting on his throne right in front of the entrance. Now, if you realize that the pasuk is going into great detail of exactly where Esther was standing and where the throne was, where the king was, who cares? Why does that matter so much? So the Mefarshim explained that usually when a person came to see the king, he didn't face the king immediately. First, he had to go through this hallway or whatever it was, and then he would come to face the king. But the throne was moved, and it was situated in a way where right away when Esther came in, Achashverosh saw her right away, right there and then. And that was part of the nice, so he would be able to see her, how beautiful she really was, and he would have mercy on her and not kill her, right there on the spot. Now one more thing, earlier in the pasuk it says, V'tilbash Esther Malchus, the Targum Sheni explains that Malchus is actually referring to Ruach HaKodesh. This point, Esther got Ruach HaKodesh, and she was considered to be one of those Nevi'os, one of those prophets that were set for generations. So throughout the years, the Jewish people had many prophets. Not all of them are mentioned, not all of them have their Sfarim named after them, but Esther was one of those prophets that was worthy enough to be mentioned. And it's interesting to note that this particular incident, Esther was very depressed. She says, "Kasher avadati avadati." She is worried that she's going to be lost not only from her husband Mordechai, according to one opinion, but she will be even lost from Olam Haba. She won't get the world to come. She's going to lose her chilek in Olam Haba. She wasn't so sure that this was the right thing to do, even though Mordechai told her to do it. And it seems very interesting that when she herself is not so sure, she's worrying that she's going to lose all her schar and Olam Haba and her husband and everything. She's particularly depressed. This is when she actually achieves a higher madrega and she gets Ruach HaKodesh. Pasuk Beis, Vayikareis HaMelech es Esther HaMalko, Emedas B'chotzer. When the king sees her standing right there, Nasachin Be'enav, she found favor in his eyes. Vayoshet HaMelech el Esther Sharvit Hazav. He let down the golden scepter, Asher Yodah, V'tikrav Esther, V'tigav Rosh HaSharvit. Now, the Gemara tells us that there were three malachim that accompanied Esther as she walked into the palace. One was to actually lift her face up. She was, remember, after 3 days of fasting, and you know, after 1 day of fasting, you feel tired and low on energy. And she is now, after 3 full days of fasting, she didn't eat for 72 hours, almost. And she's going to meet the king. This is not exactly the best time to meet, you know, for a very crucial and sensitive appointment with the king. But she's going anyway, because this is what Mordechai told her to do. And so she needed one balach to lift up her face, another one to put this kind of favor on her. What's that?
An aura.
An aura, yeah, an aura on her that to make her find favor in everybody's eyes. And a third one actually pushed down the golden scepter of Achashverosh. He was not planning on just putting it down. And apparently, even though this was his queen and he loved her, he would have still killed her right there on the spot. There were actually two guards that were set up, and they actually started charging towards Esther with their swords lifted in order to kill her. But once Achashverosh put down his golden scepter, again, by the Smaloch, they stopped right there in the spot, and Esther was saved. So she comes over, she touches the golden scepter, and Pasuk Gimel tells us, Vayomer HaMelech. The Melech, Achashverosh turns to her and says, Malach Esther Malka, what would you like? Ma bakashasech, what are you asking? At chatzi malchus v'inosen loch. I will give you up to half of my kingdom, my riches, whatever it was. That's the Pasuk Pshat. But the Targum Sheni says that what he is really saying is up until Chatzia Malchus, referring to what will split my Malchus, what will cause my Malchus to split, referring to Beis HaMikdash. Now, Dariyavish, who was the king before Achashverosh, stopped the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and Achashverosh again did not allow the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And now when Achashverosh sees Esther coming in, he becomes suspicious. Since 3 days ago, he sent out this decree with Haman to kill out all the Jews, and all of a sudden Esther comes uncalled and becomes suspicious. What's going on? Maybe Esther is really a Jewess, and she's coming to plead for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore he's telling her, I'll give you anything, but I will not let you rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Dalet. Esther turns to the king. Says, "Imal haMelech Toiv, Yoveh haMelech v'Haman haYoyim laMishta Asher Asisiloi. I want you and Haman to come and join me in the Mishta that I will make for you today." Now, Esther is not telling him right away what she wants, and this is just in general a good peopling skills that we can learn from Esther. If you have a big request you want to make from someone, don't tell him right away, okay, this is what I want. First, prepare him. Tell him, listen, I want you to come over, and I'm going to ask from you something very big. That will give the person an opportunity to prepare himself to, okay, I'm going to ready myself to actually give you what you want. When a person prepares himself mentally to give over something, there's a better chance that Esther will actually receive what she wants from Achashverosh. Now, why is she inviting Haman? What's the point of inviting Haman? Why is he a part of this? It's actually the opposite. There's no point in inviting Haman. He's the bad guy over here. He's the one that she's working against. Why is she inviting him to the Mishteh? All she's got to do is convince Achashverosh not to kill the Jews. That's it. It's finished. Why does she need Haman to be part of the Mishteh? So Targum Sheni says that Esther, over here, was worried. The Jews might say, even though they were doing tshuva, and the tshuva was apparently very effective, and they were praying and davening, and really trying to do tshuva for what they've done wrong, but somewhere deep down in their minds, they might think, we have a sister that is in the palace. She's on our side. She's going to take care of things. And really, we have nothing to worry about. So, somewhere, on some level, their tshuva will not be as strong as it should be. And Esther, worrying about this, she's now going ahead and inviting Haman to the Mishteh, signaling to the Jewish people, guys, I'm not on your side. I'm inviting Haman to my Mishteh because I'm on his side. So, don't be so quick to rely on me to take care of things, to sort things out. And that's why she's inviting Haman to the Mishteh to kind of alert the Jews and make them not rely on her at all. That way their tshuva will be on the level that it's supposed to. Now, why is it called Mishteh? Obviously, there was food over there. Mishteh is lashon drinking, wine. Why is it called, I'm saying, for if you call a party, right? Yeah, we're going to have, if you invite someone to a party, you don't tell them, okay, we're going to have this wine and that wine, the other wine. You tell them the main course, right? The entrees, the dessert, why do you tell them what the drinks that are going on over there? But apparently, wine was the main part of this party. It wasn't just, you know, meat and potatoes and different side dishes. It was all about drinking. Those were the terms that Achashverosh and Haman were used to. And that's why we have a mitzvah on Purim specifically to drink wine, because this was part of the nace, as we're going to see.
Makes asking questions easier, too.
What's that?
Makes asking questions easier.
That's true. That's another. That's a good point.
If you had the concession.
Yeah, Right, right. That's true. Pasuk Hey. Vayomer HaMelech Maru HaSalmon, bring Haman quickly. Lasis is Bar Esther. Vayomer HaMelech HaMon El Mishteh Asher Osasa Esther. The king calls Haman quickly to bring, to come to the Mishteh that Esther is inviting him to. Pasuk Vav. Vayomer HaMelech HaEsther B'Mishteh HaYoin Ma She'elosich V'nasin Lach U'ma B'Kashasich Chatz Yalmachus V'Teyas. Again, Ahasuerus is turning to Esther and telling her, what do you want? What are you asking for? I'll give you anything but the thing that will split my malchus, referring again to the Beis HaMikdash. I'll give you anything but the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Zayin, V'tan Esther V'toymar, She'elosi U'Bakashasi. Again, notice the way she's addressing Ahasuerus. I'm pleading and I'm asking for. Pasuk Ches, Im Atzachin Be'ene HaMelech, if I find favor in the eyes of the king, V'imal HaMelech Toiv, Losais Eshelosi, V'lasais Es Bakashasi, Yovei HaMelech V'homan El HaMishter Asher Es Elem, U'machar Es HaKidvar HaMelech. Again, Esther is very careful and very sensitive the way she's addressing Achshverosh. Please, if you don't mind, if I find favor in your eyes, I want you to prepare yourself for tomorrow to give me what I'm asking for. Again, Esther is prolonging this whole process by telling him to prepare himself to give her something very significant that he normally might have not have given her. And what does she say at the end? U'machar e'esek dvar ha'melech. Tomorrow I will do as the king asks. What is she referring to in those words? She's actually referring to what Achshverosh asked her right in the beginning. When he married her, he wanted to know what her lineage was. Again, even though he was the king, and he can marry whoever he wants, kings of those days were very conscious about lineage. They wanted to know that they're not marrying just a simple woman from any family. He was afraid that she didn't come from any kind of special lineage, and he wanted to make sure that she actually had special lineage. And that's why in the beginning he had all these plans of getting her to tell him exactly where she's from. He let some of the taxes go for the nations. That way she'll see, okay, if I tell him where I'm from, then he's going to give a special tax off for the nation that I come from. That didn't work, so he comes along, he actually consulted Mordechai. And Mordechai told him, why don't you gather another beauty pageant to make her jealous? And then she might tell. Mordechai was hoping that he would find someone else. But really, Achashverosh obviously didn't find someone else. But what Achashverosh meant to cause Esther to be jealous in order to get her to tell him where she's from. And nothing worked for 5 years now. They've been married for 5 years. And he even fathered a child through her, but he still did not know where she was from. Finally, at this point, Esther is turning to him and telling him, tomorrow I will tell you what my lineage is. Which is making Achashverosh very, very keen. Pasuk Tes, V'yetze Haman Bayamu, Samech V'tayv Lev, Haman walks out of the Mishteh, he's happy, he's joyous. V'chirayis Haman es Mordechai b'shar ha'melech, when he sees Mordechai sitting b'shar ha'melech, well, he come b'lo izami, men, he doesn't get up, he doesn't move. V'yimala Haman al Mordechai chema. He's filled with fury. And what it says, Mordechai b'shar ha'melech, when Mordechai is sitting b'shar ha'melech, this is actually with Esther's personal intervenient and personal appointment. She actually set Mordechai to sit b'shar ha'melech, and he was not only sitting there by himself, the Sanhedrin with him were sitting inside of the palace and paskening Dina Torah. They were ruling the different dinim that were brought to them by the Jewish people. And that, of all things, made Haman so angry. Because he saw Mordechai sitting inside the king. Inside the palace. And he couldn't stand it. He was so furious and angry. He couldn't breathe. He couldn't live. It bothered him so, so much. It was just disturbing on an unbelievable level. Pasuk Yud. And he literally had to hold himself back from killing Mordechai on the spot. He had to hold himself back. Now remember, Haman is a very, very powerful man. He is in charge of anyone who's going to have a personal audience with the king. He is extremely wealthy, very influential. Everywhere he goes, people bow down to him on the street. And earlier, he had the nerve to go ahead and kill Daniel, who was a personal advisor to the king. Because he saw Daniel going back and forth between Esther and Mordechai, he became very suspicious. He didn't know what was going on, so he just killed him. That was a very bold move on his part. And again, he had no problem to do that. But still, he was afraid to go ahead and kill Mordechai right there and then. So he comes home, he gathers his family, Oyvav Zeresh Ishtoi. Now you can make a diuk over here. It says he gathered the ones who love him and his wife Zeresh. That means that Zeresh obviously doesn't love him. But on a deeper level, he had a whole group of people, advisors, supporters, and all these people were obviously on his side. He had a very, very large party supporting him. But Zeresh in particular was a very crafty woman and a very wise woman. And he gathered all of his advisors and specifically Zeresh to help him figure out what to do about this situation that is disturbing him so much. He's telling them how wealthy he is, how many children he has. He had 30 children. 10 ended up being hung at the end, as we're going to see. 10 died in battle, and the other 10 were left. The high ranking the king gave him. The esteemed position that he has over all the other ministers. The Gemara tells us that Haman was very into money. He was very into his wealth. And he actually carried this leather amulet right on him that said exactly how much he was worth, what his net value was, and all his possessions. He was basically carrying his bank book around his neck to show everyone how wealthy he was. He was very, very into money. Esther HaMalka did not invite anyone to the special mishteh with her and the king. She only invited me. Tomorrow too, I am called to another mishteh, personal mishteh with the king and Esther. All this is not worth it for me. When he says v'chol zeh, the Gemara says that he was actually pointing to this leather amulet that he was carrying around him with at all times. He's actually pointing to this and saying, look, all this is not worth it for me, even though I'm so wealthy, it's not worth it for me. When I see Mordechai sitting Bashar HaMelech, it's all not worth it. Now, there's two points that we could take out of here. First of all, we see what a ganz fine anti-Semite Haman was. He hated Jews so much that even though he had wealth, he had honor, he had respect, anything person could dream of, he had. And just because one person was not bowing down to him, it ruined it all for him. So we see what a major anti-Semite is, and also how one midah can go ahead and destroy a person's life. Right? He had anything a person could dream of. Certainly that's the life that he would hope for. And then when he sees Mordechai sitting there, it just ruins it all. He can't enjoy any of it. It's all worthless in his eyes when he sees Mordechai sitting there. And it just ruined his life.
But couldn't he think, well, right now I can't stand him, but I'm going to kill him soon anyway. All the Jews are going to be killed. I mean,
it's true, but he has to wait 11 months for that. He couldn't stand that.
He couldn't take it.
He couldn't take it.
Like Hitler, Yimach Shmo, who instead of, you know, he could have strategically
won
the war by fighting the Russians. He chose instead to use the resources to kill Jews.
Right, that's true.
You know, the same kind of irrationality.
Right. It's just irrational. It just bothered him so much that Jews were alive.
You know, so he could have, instead of sending the troops to
right,
fight the Russians,
That's a very good example. A very good example. Pasuk Yudal, v'toymer le'zeresh ishtoi v'chol ayavav, yasu etz kavaya chamishim amo, u'b'boiker emer le'melech v'itlu es mordechai olav, u'b'oyim ha'melech ha'lemishtei sameach, v'itav ha'dovar lifneim homon v'yasu etz. So they turned to him and said, very simple, all you gotta do is make this tree, this set up this,
gallows.
Yeah, gallows that is 50 amas high, and hang Mordechai tomorrow morning. That takes care of all your problems, and you can live happily ever after. Now, it seems a bit simplistic of, you know, what's going on over here. Haman couldn't think of that on his own. He had to gather all his advisors, get Zeresh, who was so wise, and figure out what to do with this, and they tell him, oh, very simple, just kill him. Oh, okay, I couldn't think of that on my own. Actually, the Targum Sheni tells us there was a very interesting conversation going on over here in the background. They went ahead and said, okay, how should we go ahead and kill Mordechai? Should we go ahead and kill him with fire? That's not going to work. We saw that Avraham Avinu got thrown into the fire before, and Hashem saved him. Should we kill him with water? That's not going to work, because Moshe and Bnei Yisrael were saved from water. That's not going to work either. So they go through all the methods of killing, and they realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Jewish people before. They said, oh, we never saw that Hashem showed any control over wood, over wood, over an eitz. And therefore, we should go ahead and hang him on a tree, and so to speak, Hashem does not have the power to go ahead and stop us from doing that. Now, it seems like a bit weird. Like, they were so wise and so crafty, but they didn't realize that Hashem is so powerful. I'm saying, obviously, if he can split the sea, and he can save Avram from the fire, he could also save Mordechai from being hung on the tree. But in their minds, the way they worked, they were worshippers, idol worshippers. They were over the Avodah Zarah. And they worshipped these forces that God Hashem put in this world, and they recognized these spiritual forces, and they said, they figured that Hashem is another force, just like all these other forces that exist in the world. So Hashem has control over water, he has control over fire, that we have seen before, but we have never seen that he showed control over wood. And therefore, in their minds, they were very very sophisticated in terms of understanding these energies and these forces, how they work, and they are forces that really exist. Today we don't have, we're very advanced on the technological level, but we're not advanced spiritually. We don't see those forces that stand behind the sun, behind the moon. To us it seems that idol worshippers who worship the sun, it's just foolish. Well, you're worshiping the sun because, you know, it's up there in the sky. But they actually realized that the spiritual force behind it, that's what they were worshipping, not just the sun or the moon. Yeah. It was the spiritual force. Every physical force that exists in this world has a spiritual force behind it, and they were able to recognize it, and that's what they were worshipping. So they were going through all the different forces, and they realized that they thought that Hashem was another force, and therefore we can kind of fool him by hanging Mordechai on this tree, because he has no control over wood. And that's what they were planning to do. In fact, Haman went ahead himself, even though he was a very honorable and respected man, he went ahead himself, he cut down the wood, and he started building this eitz that was 50 amas out, this 50 amas high, he started building it himself, just to show us that asina mekalkala is ashura. Person who is so much filled with hatred, it totally ruins his judgment. He can't think straight. He was so honorable and so respected, but still he went ahead himself and started building this tree, even though he had plenty of people that could have done it for him. He had plenty of slaves, but because he hated Mordechai so much, it just totally distorted his thinking, and he went ahead and did it himself. Okay, we're going to stop here.
How could the